Animal abuse was incredibly common in Hollywood for quite some time, to a point where you could make an argument it was normalized and relatively accepted. Now we have the American Humane Society to put up that no animals were harmed in the making of this movie line, right? And surely you can't just throw that up there without earning it, right? And surely the AHA doesn't have some uncomfortably close ties to Hollywood executives, with no one but Hollywood itself holding them accountable because they're a nonprofit, right? Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Prism of the Past. I've been meaning to talk about this for some time now, after my four-part series about Disney especially. In this series, I purposely neglected to mention some of their horrific past actions because animal abuse was something I wanted to make an entirely separate episode about. Not only was animal abuse relatively common in old Hollywood, but deadly for animals. And to this day, the practice isn't as dead as you might think it is. Obviously, this episode will be heavily discussing animal abuse, so if that topic is a little too heavy for you, then I understand if you're not able to make it through today's episode. Now, for those of you that are still here, let's get into it. Today, we have CGI and special effects that can create animals on the screen, without any real animals actually needing to be there. Back in old Hollywood, this was not the case. One genre of film, westerns, were especially popular in the 20s, 30s, and even 40s, and they featured animals the most. Pitfalls and tripwires were used to make horses fall, for scenes when a horse and rider may take a stumble. Stunt horses who were trained to fall at a signal were sometimes used, but plenty of trained horses jumped through windows, flames, and rampaged through saloons. All of this would not only injure these horses, but even kill them. According to my sources, some individual horses became known and they would be protected because of their fame. Fritz, the famous pinto of Western star William S. Hart, was trained to fall down on command. Lie down like a shield in a gunfight and even play scenes with a monkey. When it came time for Hartz to ride Fitz off a cliff and into a gorge, a fake Fitz was constructed while the real Fitz was cued to fall on one side and safely led away. Hart himself admitted to being badly shaken by the fall, and the footage was so realistic that the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors Organization even called Hart to ask why he'd mistreated Fitz that way. Unfortunately, Fitz was the exception. Even though this beloved famous pinto had people looking out for them, many horses were seen as disposable. According to Salon, in 1939, two horses were killed in the filming of Northwest Mounted Police and two more in Jesse James. The horses in Jesse James were wearing movie blinkers with eyes painted on them. Unable to see, the horses had no idea they were running off a 75-foot cliff over white water until it was too late. The footage was impressive, the stuntman was well paid, and the horses were dead. The Hays office began working with the American Humane Association once the word got out and the AHA was granted access to sets. However, for those of you film history buffs out there, you know what the Hays Code was, and in many other cases, it was utterly ridiculous. The guidelines prevented cursing, suggestive nudity, and even insisted that marital bedrooms feature twin beds, no sleeping in the same bed. Though the end of the Hays Code was fantastic for movies, opened up more possibilities, and ushered in a golden age of movie making, it was horrible for animals. In the late 60s and into the 70s, sets were pushing boundaries. Young filmmakers wanted to create realistic, daring, and even graphic movies, which meant more animal abuse. Karen Rosa, vice president of the AHA's film and TV unit, calls those times dark days, and says that they, the filmmakers, didn't like to be told what they could or couldn't do with animals.
Killing without heroics, nothing is glorified, nothing is reaffirmed. No heroes, no cowards, no troops, no generals. I'm glad I won't live to see it.
Because the AHA wasn't on set, they couldn't prove that two mules were killed on the Spanish set of Patton in a scene in which General Patton shoots two mules blocking a bridge. But throughout the 1970s, the AHA's list of unacceptable movies cites a litany of animals killed for entertainment, horses wire-tripped, mistreatment of animals, and live snakes sliced into pieces. Gritty realism produced two of the most notorious animal welfare abuses in animal history. In Apocalypse Now, a real water buffalo was slaughtered with a machete, though it had been claimed that the buffalo was going to be slaughtered in this manner anyhow. And although the movie got great reviews, it caused a lot of upset. And the list truly does go on with these cases. Chickens were decapitated in 1973 in Billy the Kid. The movie 1900, released in 1976, contained scenes of frogs being tortured and a cat being strung up so that Donald Sutherland could crush it to death with his head. The director cuts away, so it's absolutely possible Sutherland didn't kill the cat, but The Guardian continues to discuss acts of horses and pigs being shot, dragged, or having their throats cut in various films throughout this era. Even if the Hays Code prevented censorship, the fact that Hollywood was literally torturing animals for entertainment purposes makes me quite sick. As the author in The Guardian explains, although David Attenborough himself has directed nature specials where animals die, like when a python swallows a deer, for example, he draws a line when contestants kill crocodiles, pigs, and turkeys just to get a shot in the reality show Bear Grylls. It's one thing to film nature taking its course, no matter how brutal it might be, but it's another to needlessly kill or harm them, just for entertainment. When you take into account that Bear Grylls was doing this as recently as 2015, when CGI could have made any animal abuse completely unnecessary, it makes it all the more infuriating. Now that we've got some background as to when these abuses were occurring and how, we're going to take a look at some of the worst offenders when it comes to animal abuse. And before we get into all the horrifying details, I'm just going to place the sponsor right here at the beginning because there's no good place to place it later on, I assure you. After this ad read, it is going to get significantly worse, so that's your fair warning. The holiday season is here and gift shopping is finally beginning. I know I'm doing some pre-shopping to get some stuff for my friends and family before all the craziness ensues because I don't want to deal with it later. And one of those big things that you can save for this year is a gift that they will use every single day, Raycon wireless earbuds. And at this point, I've had Raycons for years, and honestly, they have been there for me. They are old reliable, they are trusty, they're durable, they sound great, there's really no downsides here. They have seamless Bluetooth pairing and comfortable noise isolating fit so that you can start listening right away and keep listening for hours. And their new everyday earbuds come with three new sound profiles to make sure everything you're listening to sounds the best with just the right amount of bass. They have pure mode, which is great for podcast listening, blues instrumentals. They have balanced mode, which is great again for more podcasting, rock and heavy rock. And then they have bass mode, which is great for hip hop, EDM, reggae, and more. So go to buyraycon.com/prism today and unlock exclusive deals up to 20% off your Raycon order. But hurry, because this offer is available for a limited time only, and you don't want to miss it. That's buyraycon.com/prism to unlock up to 20% off your Raycons. buyraycon.com/prism. Speaking of the holidays, if you're looking for a way to also skip the long lines at the post office and dodge all of the hectic holiday traffic, why not save some time and money with stamps.com? Stamps.com lets you compare rates, print labels, and access exclusive discounts from UPS and USPS services all year long. It doesn't matter if you're selling online or running an office or a side hustle, Stamps.com can save you so much time, money, and stress during the holidays. May I emphasize saving on stress and not having to freak out as much at the post office. Plus, you can get some discounts that you can't find anywhere else, like up to 40% of USPS and up to 76% off UPS. The big thing here is that if you spend more than just a few minutes a week dealing with mailing and shipping, Stamps.com is an absolute lifesaver that you need. So save time and money this holiday season with Stamps.com. Sign up and use promo code PRISM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. And there is no long-term commitments or contracts with that. To get that deal, make sure you go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code PRISM. Enjoy!
In this land of many mysteries, it's a strange fact that the largest legends seem to collect around the smallest creatures. One of these is a mousy little rodent called the lemming. Here's an actual living legend. For it's said of this tiny animal that it commits mass suicide by rushing into the sea in droves. The story is one of the persistent tales of the Arctic. And as often happens in man's nature lore, it's a story both true and false.
We'll start with Notorious Disney. In White Wilderness, a 1958 Disney documentary, the claim was made that lemmings will commit mass suicide by jumping off cliffs and into the oceans. For decades now, people have believed that this is a genuine phenomena, thanks to Disney blowing these claims entirely out of proportion. The thing is, this never actually happened. In 1983, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation producer Brian Vallée investigated the claim and learned that the lemmings didn't jump, but were thrown off cliffs by the Disney filmmakers. The so-called lemming migration was staged with careful editing, tight camera angles, and a few dozen lemmings running around on a snow-covered Lazy Susan-style turntable, according to my source. White Wilderness was filmed in Alberta, Canada, a landlocked province and not on location in lemmings' natural habitat. There were about 20 lemming species found in the circumpolar north, not evidently in that area of Alberta. So the Disney people brought lemmings from Inuit children and couple Providence away in Manitoba and staged the whole sequence. Killing wild lemmings wouldn't have exactly been any better, of course, but there's something especially disgusting about Disney filmmakers buying animals, knowing their only purpose was to die in order to perpetuate a myth. And sure, that's not to say that nothing in nature documentaries is staged. This source uses the example of the film The Life of Birds, where close-up footage of a flying duck was shot from a car using a mallard drake trained to fly alongside the car. However, faking an entire event and killing animals in the process is an entirely different matter. Thomas McDonough, a state wildlife biologist, said that Disney may have gotten the idea from lemmings' dispersion. Once a local food supply is exhausted, lemmings will disperse, finding greener pastures. And when crossing bodies of water in the process of doing so, they might sometimes drown. This isn't lemming suicide, it's just some lemmings perishing on the journey to find a new home. The way Disney twisted this narrative is not only scientifically inaccurate, but downright cruel. The screenwriter and narrator Winston Hibler and director James Algar obviously were not men of science, they were movie makers. Their goal was to tell a story, and that's what they managed to do. Of course, whether or not the higher-ups at Disney knew what filmmakers were doing behind the scenes, this came out of their studio, and therefore, Disney is responsible for this misinformation. Unfortunately, this is far from the only time they've mistreated animals for the sake of their films. In Disney's 2006 movie 8 Below about Antarctic sledding, a husky dog was punched repeatedly in its diaphragm. In 2003, dozens of dead fish and squid washed up on shore when they filmed Pirates of the Caribbean: The Curse of the Black Pearl, because crew members had apparently taken no precautions to protect marine life when they set off special effects explosions in the ocean. Apparently, the husky during 8 Below had been beaten by its trainer after getting in a dogfight, and when the American Humane Association rep spoke to him, the trainer said he had no other choice. Then, once AHA reported the matter, they said he was just breaking up a fight and they still awarded 8 Below their no animals were harmed while they were monitoring the movie end credit. Though more about AHA in just a moment. The most recent complaint surrounding Disney and animals was actually in 2021, when quite a few fans spoke out against the movie Cruella for normalizing animal cruelty. Some claimed that Disney was trying to get people to relate to a woman whose eventual goal is to kill puppies and she doesn't deserve a redemption story. Honestly, whether or not you feel that way, at least it's a step up from when Disney employees literally abused and beat birds to death on Discovery Island. While the animals that were part of the exhibit may have been treated well, any vultures or wild birds that landed in this bird paradise were treated horrifically. Disney has also been accused of cherry-picking their movies as well, and only pretending to care about what's problematic in their catalog when it comes to animal abuse. For example, we talked in our Disney series about how they were putting warnings for depicting racism in older films, yet they don't treat White Wilderness this way. The documentary is in fact being released on Disney Plus, featured in their True Life Adventure series. One source argues that they should, quote, "put some kind of disclaimer on White Wilderness, for goodness sake. Y'all straight up murdered a bunch of animals to tell a completely fabricated story under the guise of documentary. The history of Disney is thoroughly pockmarked with issues like this, and to celebrate the triumphs in your history, you must acknowledge the failures. Take some responsibility." So, in short, Disney will put disclaimers on Peter Pan and Dumbo, but not White Wilderness, apparently. It doesn't matter if you think one is worse than the other, both are harmful in incredibly different ways. Therefore, both deserve this warning. It's the way that Hollywood and Disney don't even want to recognize their past that concerns me, in addition to the act itself. Of course, this is not another Disney episode, so we're going to move on and see what other studios and films have made history in all the worst ways. Unfortunately, things have always been pretty bad for horses in Hollywood, whether it's a Western film or not. One of the worst offenders is the famous film Ben-Hur, which won 11 Oscars and was released in 1959. As legendary as this film might be, film historians claim that over 100 horses died during production. Second unit director B. Reeves Earson was apparently merciless and brutal when working on the chariot race scene, the climax of the movie. Star Francis Bushman said that, quote, "if it limped, they shot it," end quote, when referring to the horses. Roman Navarro, who played Ben-Hur himself, was nearly killed on set, and one stuntman did pass away during a chariot crash. While I'm sure we'd love to chalk this up to it being the 50s and times were different then, especially given, you know, what we said about old Hollywood earlier, it doesn't end with Ben-Hur. Back in 2005, during the movie Flicka, two horses were killed. One had been euthanized after breaking its legs, and another broke its neck when it tripped on a rope while running. However, strangely, the AHA classified these deaths as unpreventable accidents. They also said that in either instance, did filmmakers or animal trainers fail to comply with the American Humane Guidelines for the Safe Use of Animals in Film Media. And I agree with the AHA that accidents do happen, but was this because it was unavoidable? That horse that tripped was apparently running with a long dangling lead, which, as some animal advocates say, everyone knows you should not do. Of course, it's not just the filmmakers, but even trainers have been accused of abusing horses too. One 2018 article from The Hollywood Reporter claimed, in July 2017, a private investigator arrived at a 22-acre ranch in rural Tehachapi, 2 hours north of Los Angeles. He'd bought a drone pilot to fly over the property in search of a horse his client believed had been stolen from her, which she now thought to be in ill health. The unmanned vehicle slowly surveyed the property. It never found the horse Dexter among the 11 steeds that were spotted that Saturday morning, but the drone did stumble onto something else. Beside a dry creek bed lay the rotting carcasses of a pair of horses, arranged back to back and head to head, their hides desiccated by the sun to reveal shining, intact rib cages. Other bones were scattered yards away. One of the dead horses was a white Andalusian stallion named Zeke, who'd work as a double on Winter's Tale, the 2014 romantic drama starring Colin Farrell. The other, a chestnut thoroughbred named Mr. T, had been one of the several ex-racehorses to portray Secretariat. Their trainer and the proprietor of the ranch is Rex Peterson, 63, one of Hollywood's most celebrated horsemen of the past four decades. He's racked up credits on films like 1979's The Black Stallion and 1994's Black Beauty before a recent turn towards TV with gigs like The Nick and Westworld. Peterson has been known for a stubborn and aggressive attitude towards his animals, but not downright abuse. He claims that the allegations against him are just misunderstandings and misinformation. On the other hand, fellow equestrian Carrie Swanson has gone so far as to seek and be granted a 5-year protective order against Peterson, accusing him of verbal and physical abuse, as well as stealing several horses. As they used to have a romantic and professional partnership, and since she didn't speak for the article, maybe this genuinely was just a falling out. Well, it could be, but others speculate something sinister is happening behind the scenes. Peterson's son, Ryan, claimed that his dad accused his fiancée, Christine Pitcairn, of theft and threatened to retaliate by damaging Ryan's car and harming their horses. After a nasty confrontation, two of Christine and Ryan's favorite horses died suddenly within a day of each other. Ryan is convinced his father poisoned them as the horses were healthy and suddenly after these threats, they dropped dead. Peterson vehemently denies this as well as any other allegations of abuse, but Ryan insists that his father, at best, is lazy when it comes to taking care of his animals. I haven't seen much of an update to this case, but there are many more allegations of abuse. Apparently, sheep and goats died of dehydration, exhausted, and drowning on the set of The Hobbit, an unexpected journey. Yet, the AHA didn't seem to respond much at all to these allegations. In fact, they said the lack of physical evidence and jurisdiction made it difficult. So they placed a carefully worded credit at the end of the film that reads how they monitored all of the significant animal action and no animals were harmed during such action. And gee, I don't know, but that just seems like a really odd way of saying, hey, a bunch of animals died of dehydration and exhaustion during a hiatus of filming where they weren't monitored, but since we weren't supposed to watch them, then it's fine. Then in 2017, more outrage was sparked when footage of a German shepherd resisting shooting a swimming scene went viral. American Humane claimed that the video was misleadingly edited and the dog was very well taken care of, while PETA called for a boycott of the film. And obviously, as many of you know, I don't like PETA, to put it mildly, and I'm sure any of you know that I consider them to be basically one of the largest kill shelters out there. However, between everything we've heard, all the allegations of abuse in multiple films, even modern ones, I started to wonder if the AHA's word is actually worth anything at all. And as it turns out, it's probably not. The AHA's No Animals Were Harmed message for movies is there for a reason, right? Well, it's a lot easier to get that message up on the screen than you might actually think. According to American Humane, they monitor animals in filmed media and hold the exclusive right to award the no animals were harmed that they work with production personnel, trainers, and even monitor about 70% of known animal action in films and television production. Their Humane Hollywood website shows recently certified movies, and their About Us page reads as such. Animal actors are a cherished part of American culture, playing some of the most iconic, beloved characters of all time. Our No Animals Were Harmed program, the only industry-sanctioned effort with oversight of animals in film production, has made the protection of animal actors its duty for over 80 years. Our certification is the trusted standard for the humane treatment of animals in film and television, recognized internationally by movie makers, TV producers, and the viewing public, who rightfully expect and demand that no animals were harmed in the making of filmed entertainment. It was not always like that, however. In Hollywood's early days, animals were expendable props. If the script called for it, they were put in jeopardy without a second thought. This was never more apparent than during the film of the classic Western Jesse James in 1939, when a horse was deliberately ridden off a cliff to its death. The American public was rightly outraged and demanded action. American Humane answered that call. As we always know, just because something is the standard doesn't mean that it always works or that it's good. In fact, recent investigations have claimed that AHA is actually quite corrupt. Not only would this mean that animals can get harmed, worryingly, many of them may not be aware of the topic because they believe they're right to entrust these people monitoring it all. But there's a few incredibly worrying and concerning examples where animals' well-being has not been a priority for the AHA, and they've tried to cover it up or forgive abuse when it occurs. Gina Johnson, one AHA monitor for the film Life of Pi, confided in one of her coworkers through email that, quote, "Last week we almost fucking killed King in the water tank," end quote. King is a Bengal tiger that, in the movie, shares a lifeboat with a boy lost at sea. Though many scenes were made with CGI, King was employed from time to time as well. Johnson explained to her friend that one scene went really bad, as she puts it, and he damn near drowned trying to swim up the side of a water tank. King's trainer was able to snag him with a catch rope, and King did make it out safely, but the danger was there, without a doubt. Yet, rather than express concern for King and a need for improvement, Johnson said in the email that her friend shouldn't mention this to anyone, especially inside the office. To make these matters worse, Johnson was said to be intimately involved with a high-ranking production executive in this movie, and she awarded them the No Animals Were Harmed credit at the end of the movie. Frankly, I'd consider a tiger nearly drowning harm, but I guess our standards are quite different. One spokesman denied that King nearly drowned to begin with and implied that Gina was just sending a dramatic email to her friend. Then again, why tell her friend so clearly not to bring it up as if it was a secret if she was just gossiping? I'm not sure I entirely buy this or not, but I wanted to include this and present it as a possibility for the sake of telling both sides. The Hollywood Reporter investigative piece also brings up Pirates of the Caribbean, a romantic comedy called Failure to Launch, the sledding movie Eight Below, and plenty of other examples when demonstrating just how useless the AHA has been. In Failure to Launch, by the way, an on-set monitor explained that a handler dropped a chipmunk, stepped on it, and killed it. Though, if you check on the AHA's online rating review of that movie, they don't mention that a chipmunk died whatsoever. THR adds, on There Will Be Blood from Paramount Vantage, multiple horses died, including a couple from colic, which often is triggered by heatstroke. 9 days before they died, on June 15, 2006, the AHA rep on set in Texas received an anonymous complaint that, "It is a very dry, hot, dusty, and windy day, and the horses are not getting water." In its statement to THR, the AHA says, "There was a rash of horses suffering from colic throughout the county at the time." In its online review, however, the AHA did not reveal the horses' deaths or that colic was an issue. It gave the film a modified end credit that read, "American Humane monitored the animal action." Apparently, this film received a ranking of acceptable from the AHA, despite nothing about it, what I just read, being acceptable behavior. Colic is a fairly treatable disease in horses, at least from what I've seen from some cursory searching. So if multiple horses died on set, yes, it's possible that they simply had so many horses that a few were bound to get ill, but it also seems as some may not have been getting the treatment they needed. Hell, if they genuinely weren't getting water, then they weren't getting the bare necessities needed. And there's more. An elderly giraffe died on Sony's 2011 Zookeeper set, and dogs suffering from bloat and cancer died during the production of New Regency's Marmaduke and the Weinstein Company's Our Idiot Brother, respectively. An AHA spokesperson confirms the dog had bloat and says the cancer was not work-related. In March, a 5-foot-long shark died after being placed in a small inflatable pool during a Kmart commercial shoot in Van Nuys. All of these productions had AHA monitors on set. It's fascinating and ironic. From being the protectors of animals, they've become complicit to animal cruelty, said Bob Ferber, a veteran LA City Attorney's Office prosecutor who founded and supervised its animal protection unit until retiring in March. Apparently, though AHA said the deaths in Flicka were preventable, when Ferber actually dispatched Animal Control to talk to AHA about them, they actually told Animal Control to go fuck themselves. And yes, that is actually the language used. If the animals' deaths were truly accidents, why wouldn't they want to prove that and work with the people? Their hostile attitude did not help their case, and the conflicts of interest don't end with Life of Pi either. On October 1, 2011, the Hallmark Channel premiered Love's Everlasting Courage, a made-for-TV movie about pioneer America monitored by the AHA. That same evening, the AHA presented their inaugural Hero Dog Awards, and subsequently, Hallmark broadcast the Hero Dog Awards Gala. They go hand in hand together, right? Well, it seems only natural they do, because apparently the parent company of Hallmark, Crown Media's CEO Bill Abbott, also sat on the AHA's Film and TV Unit Advisory Board. How can you effectively monitor the animal's safety in a film in an unbiased way when you have a vested interest in it succeeding? As it turns out, you really can't. Apparently in June 2010, during the filming of Courage, a horse named Glass was injured when a runway wagon lost control and impaled his left hindquarter. He went into shock from extreme blood loss and was later euthanized. AHA employees admitted that there was a reason to suspect negligence played a role, as the horses didn't need to be in a position where they could get injured to begin with, but AHA didn't do an external investigation whatsoever. The film couldn't get an AHA credit, and that's not apparently unusual for TV anyway, but I'm not sure this would be the case if there were a movie. Judging by what we've read so far, I bet they would have gotten one of those, this AHA thing was monitored and blah 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 blah, and it sure looks good on paper, but it doesn't promise anything when you dig deeper. Abbott promised that an outside investigation wouldn't have revealed anything other than this being an accident, and said this of his relationship with the AHA. I can understand how that would raise an eyebrow, but it's almost like when a coach has a son on the team and that coach is more difficult on that son than other people. I guess it doesn't matter now anyway, as he left Crown Media after Hallmark removed a commercial with a same-sex couple, faced backlash, and then had to quickly backtrack and apologize. Even so, this massive conflict of interest didn't just raise an eyebrow, but it sent up quite a lot of warning signs. After all, the AHA is a nonprofit, and they've taken on this role as a regulator instead of a government entity, for example. There's an arrangement between SAG-AFTRA Actors Unit and the Association of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which funds AHA. So that means, if the AHA makes a massive mistake or is paid off, they're really only accountable to Hollywood. The same industry that wants to appease them is the one paying them. It's a strange dynamic, to say the least, and it causes systemic glaring issues. The AHA isn't just useless, but harmful. And those who do try to act against them have actually been silenced, such as a former AHA employee named Barbara Casey. Apparently, she worked on the HBO-canceled series Luck and complained about the horrendous conditions on the show. Horses were drugged, underweight, and sick during progression, so she, like her job entails, brought it to the attention of the AHA. Instead of the AHA saying, "This is terrible, let's do something about this," they opted to fire her. So not only have they been neglectful and quiet on the list, but now we can add that they have actively fired people that genuinely care and want to make the difference that they claim to be making. The Guardian wrote, Casey's suit states she urged the Humane Association to report HBO and producers to authorities for possible animal cruelty criminal charges. The association bowed to political and financial pressure and refused to report the production defendant's conduct to the authorities, the lawsuit states. And that's disgusting. There's no other way to say that. It's simply disgusting. Casey's suit was originally against both HBO and the AHA, but eventually she dropped the suit against HBO and settled with the AHA the following year. No terms of the agreement were revealed, but it's worth noting that in her amended complaint, she said AHA was liable for a repeated pattern and practice of concealing animal deaths and injuries as a matter of course. Needless to say, AHA denied these claims, and because the matter was settled, I'm not sure if we'll ever know what truly happened behind the scenes. Aside from these active cover-ups, there's also even more negligence on AHA's part. One staffer claims that because there's a shortage on safety representatives, they can get sent to multiple sets in a single day, meaning they're double booked and can simply check off a set as covered even though someone was only there for a few minutes. Doesn't really seem like an effective way to monitor a set, does it? They also stated that limited personnel resources are allocated towards the riskiest sets. The AHA touts a 99.98% safety rating, meaning almost 100% of the animals they monitor are not harmed. But the AHA's internal critics insist the number is farcical and no real statistical grounding. They claim the aggregate overall ratio is purposely inflated by the inclusion of high volumes of impossible-to-count insects. Think of the days where you're using, say, 10,000 worms, 10,000 cockroaches, 50,000 ants, 25,000 beetles, explains one employee. While the number of injuries or deaths is undercounted because the organization doesn't account for those that occur while an animal is in transit or at a holding facility, as opposed to specifically on set. Adds a colleague, it's a total bullshit number made up for PR purposes. It's so frustrating to hear about how the AHA fakes, ignores, or dismisses animal abuse as accidents. Yet we know what happened when there's no codes whatsoever, and that was chaotic and awful for the animals too. I don't know exactly how a middle ground can actually be reached here. Maybe the AHA just needs to be accountable to someone aside from Hollywood, or maybe a different entity altogether needs to get involved. Representatives are allegedly only seen as good if they're not making waves, and as one employee claimed, if a rep gets a complaint from a trainer, they're pulled from the set. Ones that actually fight for animal welfare are troublemakers, even though it's their job to do so, or at least it should be anyway. Perhaps because of this, combined with the little time AHA reps seem to have on sets, their actions tend to be more reactionary as opposed to preventative. They apparently don't take initiative to investigate injuries and deaths of animals, but simply use it as a face-saving tactic when the public or media pressures them to act. If we acknowledge that something went wrong and wasn't a tragic, unpreventable accident, it means we bear some responsibility, says one employee. The AHA does not want responsibility. Likewise, when monitors do report serious accidents to their supervisors at the film and TV unit Studio City headquarters, they claim there rarely is significant follow-up. There are plenty of examples where we brought things to a higher level and management squashed it, says another staffer. It just goes into the database and nothing ever happens. Things go away all the time. They're never taken further. There's plenty of injuries to go around as well. From 2001 to 2006, 82 horses had been negatively affected on sets, about 10% were killed, and there were 58 injuries. Reporter Gary Baum, the reporter of the Hollywood Reporter investigation, was featured on NPR to talk about the situation and said that he believes one of these horses even died from colliding with a camera car on set. Whether it's claiming these deaths fall outside their jurisdiction or being generally adverse to investigations or blaming a lack of funding, AHA has been accused of it all. Their hands are tied so often that though the AHA is saying they want to expand, I lean toward the end of saying that they need to just be scrapped and redone. After all, the fact that they still award the no animals were harmed credit at all when this is extreme mismanagement is just happening all over the place feels just like pointless words. Staffers say these credits can be given even without a report being reviewed and that post-production is pressured to give good reviews. That doesn't sound like an issue of funding or lack of jurisdiction to me, but a lack of putting in good faith effort. But what does the AHA have to say about this? Well, it's fine, because according to a board member, Candy Spelling, I think what people think it means is that when a horse dies in the movies, it didn't really die, she says. I think that people think the AHA is monitoring is just when the cameras are rolling. As for her interpretation of the end credits, she says, I assume that no animals were harmed during the shooting. And frankly, no, that's not what I've assumed the end credit means. For years now, apparently wrongfully so, if I see no animals were harmed, I've assumed it meant animals were well taken care of, well trained, and not put into genuinely dangerous positions and kept safe from, you know, one day of shooting to their last day on set. That's what I thought the warning meant, and that's what I think it should mean, in my opinion. It doesn't mean that if an animal gets hurt between scenes because of the environment that it doesn't count. Yet the AHA seems intent on viewing it that way. Recently, they've come up with a new ranking or category for films, aside from outstanding, acceptable, or unacceptable. This new one is called Special Circumstances, for productions when an unpreventable illness, injury, or fatality can occur to an animal. And an internal employee essentially admits that it's basically just used to protect their own self-interests. Even more frustratingly, the AHA is also adding a fee-for-service plan, cutting out the middleman and telling producers to pay them directly for their regulatory services, making potential conflicts of interest even worse. Some changes they've made seem positive, like firing some monitors and replacing them with vets, but critics say it's a smokescreen. They're paying for a vet who can care for an injured animal, but they aren't trained to keep it from being harmed in the first place. While I would love to believe that the AHA will improve and animal welfare will improve, I'm not going to sit here and hold my breath. I wouldn't go so far as to say PETA does and say that no animals should be allowed in movies unless they're CGI, but at the very least, something needs to change. But with all of that being said, that's where I'm going to end today's episode. Let me know what you think. I know this was kind of a tougher one to swallow. It was a little more serious, and I know I didn't cover every single detail, mainly because, oh my god, I was going to be sick with just how much abuse goes on. But if you did learn something new from today's episode, make sure that you're liking, following, and subscribing to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. I want to thank you for spending some time here with me today. I appreciate it, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye!